Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Deadly gun violence in the District of Columbia continues to grab headlines and the attention of communities that have to deal with the threat at their front doors. Just today, a march and vigil to honor the life of 6-year-old Nia Courtney, shot to death over the weekend, along with wounding several others. Well, tonight, we're taking a deep dive into the problem and taking a look at possible solutions as well. My guests are D.C. Ward 8 Councilmember Trayon White, also Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper. Also, I want to hear from our listeners tonight. What do you think is behind this growing problem in the district, as well as looking to you for some solutions as well? Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Councilmember White, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Peace and love. Thanks for having
me. Denise, so good to have you on the program as well. Always good to have your voice in these discussions.
Thanks a lot, Harold. It's been a long time, so
absolutely
glad to be with you.
Councilmember White, I want to first ask you, do you have any updates on the investigation into the murder of Nia Courtney? Have you had any conversations with police today?
Yes, but I can't discuss this. An open investigation, as you know. You have to ask that to the detectives or the police department or FBI.
Can you at least tell us whether or not they gave you any indication as to possible progress beyond the last bit of information that they gave to us, finding the vehicle that was involved in that drive-by shooting?
The vehicle was found, from what I know, but it was found burned, and that's public information. That's the last I heard about the vehicle. Mm-hmm.
You were at the march and vigil today on Martin Luther King Avenue in your ward today. What did you hear from the people you were marching with?
Well, the people didn't talk much, but the people who... there were some activists who spoke, and I think that one of the things we have to do is give a lending voice and an ear to the younger generation. One of the local artists, J.G. Riff, held the vigil today or the march today, and he brought out what I call a non-traditional generational. Mr. Lockridge called them a silent majority, and those are the individuals who are most at risk, the least engaged, and least active on the front line. And so it was encouraging for me to see them. He talked about, you know, the issue of people self-medicating. And when they do these drive-bys or these shootings, they're not in their right state of mind. And as you know, hurt people hurt people. But I always say that heal people as well. And so there's a lot of trauma, hurt and pain in our community, the black community, that's been shown in other ways, especially through violence or through negative acts of behavior.
What do you believe is the issue?
There's no one issue. We've been in a situation where we, in a city, Washington, D.C., where we experienced murder capital at one point. And during this time, a lot of the father figures and fathers were stripped from the neighborhood through mass incarceration. We never recovered from the crack epidemic that crippled Washington, D.C., especially in the black community. So these are the babies of that generation. And so you have, like in Ward 8, we have 81% single-parent households, predominantly African-American females. And so there's a breakdown in the family. Then you look at some of the other things that contribute to education, the stability of the family, the economics of the community. It's a lot of different factors. So it's not just one thing, even the eating habits of the community. And so we have a lot that we're working on in the community to address some of the social ills that deal with the root causes of the violence.
Denise, you attended the news conference held by Police Chief Conti and Mayor Bowser. Share your impressions of what you heard from the podium that day in reference to not just the murder of Nia Courtney, but the deadly gun violence as a whole?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I heard a lot of things, and I think Councilmember White is right, because what we're experiencing in the community, I don't think that politicians, police officers, anybody can put a finger on it. And so what I heard was frustration. I heard anger. I heard hurt and pain. And I heard a determination to do something. But that's a great big question mark that nobody seems to know how to answer. What I didn't hear was, which is a question that the community seems to have often, is how you can have neighborhoods, blocks, where, you know, illegal activity happens 24/7. Police officers are nearby watching. And as one woman said, if she had ran, I don't know if it would have happened there at the corner of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, but if she were to run through a stop sign or a red light, and we all know this, within a week, she would have gotten a traffic violation because they would have captured her license plate number. And so some of the things that, you know, we experience as everyday citizens when we're caught doing things that, you know, I mean, true, they may be illegal, speeding, running red lights, you know, some people get caught shoplifting, whatever the thing is. But when egregious crimes like this happen and the police who are there don't see it, you know, and now the whole community is trying to find a car, you know, it some of that just doesn't make sense. And I think the community left that press conference with unanswered questions.
Tonight we are talking about the rise in deadly gun violence in the District of Columbia. This conversation coming on the heels of the murder of 6-year-old Nia Courtney over the weekend. Also, there was a shooting just outside of Nats Park where the Padres and the Nationals were playing baseball, and all hell broke loose. People running from the stands, seeking safety and the like. That also making national news this weekend. We're talking about the problems. We're talking about possible solutions. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We want to remind you, we are, as always, taking calls up until 8 o'clock tonight, even after 7:30. Let's talk to Chris. Chris calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Chris, are you there? Chris, give us a call back. Let's go to Ms. Renee. Ms. Renee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ms. Renee, are you there? Give us a call back. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. One of the things, Councilmember White, I heard the mayor say, and, you know, I agree with, and we've been hearing this for a while, maybe you can provide some insight into this comment. She said she was, and this is paraphrasing, you know, really frustrated, mystified at the inability of people to solve their differences without gun violence. Now, obviously, one could, you know, the kind of people who are committing these horrific crimes could run the gamut of people who just have, you know, street beefs, from somebody stepping on your shoes all the way to drug related business. What are your thoughts about her comments?
Well, in order to be involved in gun violence, you have to have a gun. I encounter a lot of young people, younger now than I ever seen before, that perpetuate the narrative it's okay for them to carry a gun, a $1,500 gun, but don't have $20 to their name. So then I must ask myself, where are these guns coming from, and how is this young man, who can't get a quality meal at night to eat and nourish his body, have a gun on his waist with a extended clip, right? And so I started to think about some of the some of the narratives that I hear as far as, you know, if our students are dropping out of school, what are we doing with them, right? If they're not performing well at elementary school, what are they doing in middle school and high school? I look at the recent incidents. Three of them involved a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, a 17-year-old. And I brought up something about the lack of recreation, access to mentoring in our community, and it was dismissed, right? But you got to think about 4 years ago, those individuals was 11, 12, and 13. And we have to start earlier intervening into their lives, into their school, into their spaces, influence them. Because right now, the greatest influence on a young person is another young person. And they're leading themselves. And social media is louder than the parents. And so we have to address some of and catch up to date with what's happening in our community on so many different levels. And so I'm more interested in hearing from them, providing what their needs are, because it's an old saying that when the children don't feel love of the community, they are burning down to feel this warmth. And so our children are crying out for help, and we're not doing a great job of meeting those needs.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kathy, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Kathy. What's on your mind?
Well, this is anytime we have children getting killed and then juveniles committing crimes, we have to ask, where are the parents? And we need the leadership of the city needs to stop making excuses about why children are killing each other and why Black people are killing each other. We need some responsibility. We don't need to talk about things that are not really relevant. I am a parent. I was a single parent. My child is the youngest person ever elected in the District of Columbia. She is well educated. She has her degree. She's been abroad. And she didn't grow up in a wealthy household, but she grew up in a caring household. And we need to make sure that we hold parents accountable, and we need to stop this defund the police garbage.
Let me ask you something, Kathy, because I want to make sure that I'm clear on what you said. You, on one hand, you were talking about, obviously, these things need to start at home, as you have done with your child. But you said that city leaders need to stop making excuses. When you say that, what do you mean, stop making excuses? Give me a specific.
Like, you know, where all these children are growing up in single family homes. No, they're growing up in homes where the parents obviously are not taking parental action. When parents don't care about their children, children are out there with undeveloped frontal lobes, just pretty much doing anything. So we need to start holding parents accountable and stop making excuses for that. If a juvenile never show up in the criminal justice system, where are the parents? Mm.
Can I say something to that?
Please go right ahead.
So even some of the most disruptive or aggressive youth that I encounter and I meet their parents, I very rarely ever see a mom or a parent that don't care about their kids. So to say that the parents used to start caring about their kids, I don't think that's accurate in my experience doing this work for 17 years.
So if that,
I work with at-risk families, and when parents are not doing their job and they're focused on other things besides parenting, they have children that are not going to school, not following the rules, and not respecting boundaries. These things parents are supposed to teach you, and our school system and our society as a whole reinforces that. That's not happening.
But
then we have children out committing heinous crimes.
Well, hold on for a minute, Kathy, and I want to hear from Denise as well. But if you're saying that, you know, city leadership is making excuses, is it the responsibility of the District of Columbia's government to parent the parents?
No, it's the responsibility of the government to stop pandering this defund the police rhetoric. Like the chairman of the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, he keeps talking about nonsense, defund the police, and dealing with African Americans as though we are monolithic and we all hate the police. That's ridiculous. You know, I live in a community where we have good relationships with the police, where we appreciate policing and boundaries, and our police officers respect who we are.
Okay.
And that needs to be replicated throughout the community,
Denise,
not just here.
Denise, go right ahead. Kathy, thank you so much for your comments. Denise, please speak your piece.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to say news is minutes after that march that happened on Martin Luther King Avenue today, which came right past my office, there was a stabbing that occurred on the same block as my office, and police officers had the place lined, roped off. And so that, I mean, marches are important, and I will participate in a march until I can't march anymore. But, you know, I think that there's still a lot going on in our community, and Councilmember White, if you haven't heard about it, you know, that did happen today. I don't think anyone died, but I think it's just ironic that, you know, as folks were marching, talking about get rid of guns and peace in the community, there's a stabbing that happens right afterward. But I'd also say that, you know, I'm like this caller. You know, I have grown sons, and I don't know about Trayon, but a lot of us grew up in single-family homes, and so we don't think that that necessarily is the issue. But, you know, my kids are grown, and so now I'm in a community where I see a lot of young people who are not, who do not interact with adults because we're scared of them. You know what I mean? And I think that what it's going to take, if we see a bunch of folks hanging out on the corner, we can't just drive by and turn up our noses and say, look at them, because I've seen it happen time and time again. If you stop and engage with them and have a conversation with them, and Trayon, you do it, I'm sorry, Councilmember White, you do it all the time. You know, we separate ourselves from our own children. We don't talk to them, and because their parents don't do it, doesn't mean that we can't. You know, as young people, they'll listen to a stranger sometimes quicker than they'll listen to their own parents. And sometimes have more respect for what that parent will share with them than they will for what that stranger, you know, or concerned citizen will say to them than what their parents will say. And I would say that I think more of us need to, you know, reach out, engage. We don't have to be in a program. You know, had a young man smoking marijuana on the office on my porch today. I told him, I said, look, you know, I mean, we talked, we briefly interacted. I got his name, you know, and I don't know what I mean. I hope nothing happens to him. And I always say to them, please be careful. Please be safe. But I just don't think that we interact with our kids enough. And Councilman White, you know, over here in Southeast, I mean, a lot of people in other communities, I think we need to just, you know, that whole block where Nia was killed, I mean, people don't even go to that block except, you know, to do business. They don't go to they don't support the businesses in that block. Only the people that hang out there do that. And so we separate ourselves a lot. And I think that's part of the crime of this whole thing about talking about the village. We don't believe in the village, you know, but
Denise,
we talk about
let me stop you. I'll let you finish your point. I've got to take a break. Oh, no, you're not yet. I've got more for you. Sheila calling from D.C. Daniel's calling from D.C. Don't hang up. We will hear from you next as well. Going to take a quick break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, keep trying. I want to hear from you. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm on WHUR is next. This conversation continues on SiriusXM and our other platforms. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the deadly gun violence in the District of Columbia with Ward 8 Councilmember Trayon White and the publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, Denise Rolark Barnes. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Let me go to Sheila. She's been patiently waiting. Sheila, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I hope you can hear me because it's coming
through. I can. Go right ahead.
Okay. First of all, about 20 years ago, we used to have a round table. We used to have the mayor and all the different service area agents to come out. And we used to come to, you know, we used to resolve things like this. You know, now we don't have this. You know, I grew up in Ward 5. you know, and I knew the police. My children knew the police. But today, everything is different, you know. And what the mayor was talking about, dropping the age limit far as from 16 to a lower age, the children at a lower age, their minds not ready for that. They're not strong enough. So why would we want to build more jail? We talked about not building more jail for adults. We got to come to a conclusion besides locking these children up. Yes, that little, the two little girls that did some shootings down Southwest, neither one of them should have went home. No, they shouldn't have. But we don't house our own prisons, first of all. So we got to come to a lot of conclusions on how we're going to take care of not just the youth, but the adults, too.
Okay.
They're just in trouble.
Thank you so much. Councilmember White, go ahead. Councilmember, you were going to say something.
I'm listening.
No,
that wasn't me. But if you want me to say something,
please do. I thought that was your voice. Please go right ahead.
Well, I think that for me, living and growing up in Ward 8, it's a disconnect in generations. And I'm hearing the pain on all sides. And I think there has to be some conversation where we can talk about the differences or the problems, but the issue is that we need to address it with some solutions, right? And, you know, and that's what it's really all about. And it's not those people or them young people or the parents. It's us, right? That's someone's aunt. That's someone's niece. That's someone's grandchild. That's someone's nephew. And until we see it as such, we have missed the key word in the word community, and that's unity. And that's the reality we'll be facing in the community. It's just too many factions. In the community, we can't move along until we unite. We can't afford to be disconnected or arguing and fighting and killing each other during this day and time. The population of African Americans in Washington, D.C. is shrinking every day. Diabetes, high blood pressure, disease, cancer, you name it, we have it. And so we need to unite and figure out what we can do to help each other get to the next level in life. No one is better than anyone else. So I just want to...
Sheila, thank you so much for your phone call. Councilmember White, what is your opinion of the announcement, not only of today, but also yesterday, by Police Chief Robert Conte, the one today about the bicycle patrols? The patrols, those first communities are not in Ward 8, they're not in Ward 7. They are in Bloomingdale, Columbia Heights, and Washington Highlands. And also yesterday, the partnership with the ATF and the U.S. Attorney's Office in prosecuting these deadly gun crimes. Your thoughts about these 2 days of announcements?
Well, I'm one who believes that police is not the end-all solution to addressing crime. We saw mass incarceration in D.C., the war on drugs, war on crime. In fact, when Baby Nana was shot, it was a police car. If you look at the videos, if you look to the left, you see the police lights. The police were sitting there the entire time.
Right.
When the people started running, they were still there. When another group came around the corner running, it was still there. Do police have a role? Absolutely. But someone know why these young men or young ladies came to retaliate for this shooting. Someone know when they was getting in the car, they loaded their guns to come around, and they saw them babies sitting there before they started shooting. So it's a mindset and some cultural stuff that we have to stop saying, this is okay, this is not okay, for you to have an automatic rifle and shoot into a crowd of innocent people. And so you can have the police riding on bikes all day. One of the things need to happen, we need to have more police from D.C., from the community. I heard the young lady just talk about when she grew up, about the police was different back then than it is now. We have a lot of military people signing up for our police department and don't have the cultural competencies to address our issues in our community. Mm. So police not the end-all solution to address crime in our community.
Daniels, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
First of all, I just want to tell the councilman that I think he's doing a great job, and he's absolutely right about the unity. You know, I grew up in Southeast D.C., and I experienced the gauntlet of crime, violence, and all those things. And I would say that for the younger people, it's like acceptable to them. And it basically they're doing it because they're afraid. You know, they worrying about what other people think about them. So I think that it'd be definitely good that people come back into their communities where they grew up at, and because life has took them different places. Like Councilman said, nobody's better than nobody. These areas are the places that made you, and because you went on to be successful, you walked away from them and forgot about them. So these young people, they need people to come back to show them that it's possible to make a better change, a difference in their life, and do things in a positive nature. But a lot of it is just about being afraid, you know, to be in your neighborhood and be called a weak one. So we can go around the horn about police, this and that, but when I grew up, it was a community of people who stood up for each other and loved one another. And the older gentlemen around my neighborhood, they gave us opportunities to do different things. When they seen us in court is doing things wrong, they talked to us, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think we get that enough. I think we got a lot of brothers who still out there in the street just accepting that and allowing the young people to do the things they doing. And I think Councilmember is right. It's going to take all of us, not just the shock of a baby getting killed. It's going to take everybody to remember that we as a people, we need to stand together and love one another.
So, right, different. So thank you, Daniels. I have to, Denise, I need you to help me with this. Because there is a difference between nostalgia and history. And I've heard a couple of callers come on here and talk about the good old days, about how back in the day and 20 years ago when we had this and we had... No, we didn't. That's not true. Denise, you and I are approximately the same age. Back in the 80s and 90s during the crack epidemic, we had... It upwards of 400 murders a year. One murder is one too many. But as of today, the District of Columbia has 105 murders. As of this time a year ago, the District of Columbia had, in July 2020, on the 21st, 105 murders. So I think that we need to be careful about talking about the good old days and being nostalgic when, you know, when we had this so-called community, because Denise, there was blood running in the street during these so-called good old days.
So Harold, I still think based on that, I might be a little older because at that time I was raising two boys and in Southeast, and several of those murders happened in front of my house or on my block. So, you know, I get that. And I think that whatever, if there are some memories of the good old days, whatever those memories are, then embrace those memories and repeat them individually. You know, I mean, you talk about police. Police have a job. Mm-hmm. They have a role to play. Let them play their role. Politicians, you know, Councilmember White's talking about, you know, increasing the numbers of recreation centers that we've lost in the community and creating institutions which he has the power to influence. You know, let him do that. But if he builds a baseball field or a recreation center, then it takes you and me and everybody else. That's the one thing that helped me in the good old days. You know, I spent every single day in my middle school years at a recreation center every day. And the people there not only taught me sports and games and what have you, but they taught me values.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I learned it. We have baseball fields. We don't have soccer over here. We have recreation centers. I mean, but we don't have people to work with the kids. You know what I mean? So he can do his job to build whatever, but we need people who have skills, photographers, graphic designers, people who sew, you know, all kinds of stuff to come in and say, look, I want to operate a program. How can I do it? And recognize the fact that, you know, that money may be there or may not be there. But whatever it is that each individual can do, when you wake up in the morning and you say, what, not what they ought to do, but what can I do to address this problem and to try to make a difference? That's what I'm doing right now, is just trying to figure out what can I do. And so I can't say the police ought to be doing more because I get frustrated when I start pointing fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I can only make the difference that I can make. And so, you know, if we are, you know, romanticizing the good old days, whatever was good about those days, you repeat those days with the people, with the young people in your community. Know their names. You know their names. Don't let kids be in your community and you do not know their names.
That's an excellent point. Know their names while they're alive before we end up marching and saying their names if they become victims.
I just want to say one other thing. Another colleague of ours whose grandson was shot and killed in his apartment on Friday night cannot find a place to hold a funeral for his grandson because churches are not available but to people who are members of those churches and because of COVID. But think about how sad it is when you've lost a child and you have no place to hold a funeral for them. That's bittersweet. It's awful. And that's what's happening.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lakeisha, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Lakeisha. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I hear all the perspectives, and I just wanted to say that I think it's a collaboration of things. It's the lack of resources. I'm from Ward 8, and there has been more we spoke about, and I get it. We march. And I also heard the young lady's current perspective about the moms not being, not caring. It's not that the moms don't care. It's that the moms are the only person in the household that has to provide for the children. So if the moms is out all day working, then we have to be out working and the children is at home by themselves. There's no other resources. All the resources is being snatched out. And if there are resources available, there's certain stipulations that you can't do this, you can't do this about marijuana. If we legalize marijuana is legalized, why can't the children, at some point, that's how people deal with trauma. It's a lot of unannounced trauma that's in the house. It's so many things. It's a collaboration of things. And we all have to do better as people. And I get it. We all have to play our part. But it has to be illuminated to the world, not just to the communities. This is happening all over the world.
Thank you so much, Lakeisha. Joseph. Joseph calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. Fisher.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I was just going to refer to the two ladies that spoke earlier plus this lady that spoke. Now, one of the things that I noticed in the African community, the Black American community, it's babies having babies. You understand? And if you talk about foundation, it has to start from the home. Now, if babies are having babies, it's difficult for you to give what you don't have. Let me give you an instance. One time I was driving. Next to me, there's a young lady with two of his children inside her car, and she was smoking marijuana. And these are like 2-3 years old kids. She was smoking inside the same car. Now, those kids are inhaling that thing, that smoke. What do you expect of those kids when they get to 10, 15? They're already being polluted. You understand? So it is something that has to go back to the root, the home, where the parents, somebody has to know how, like get these young parents and see how they can, you know, impact them. Maybe one elderly people need how to, like, you know, impact them and teach them how to be parents. Because a lot of them don't know how to be parents. They don't discipline their child. They don't even want you to talk to their child. It's so many things that is wrong. So if they are going to build community center and everybody's going to be involved, it takes a village to raise a child. Let them have a place where people that are elderly, that are, you know, back in the 80s, 70s, come in to train these people, talk to them. You understand me? If somebody corrects your child, does not mean the person loves your child less.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Joseph, thank you so much. Councilmember White, often when we heard you at, you know, press conferences, press events, you often talk about, you know, the murder rate in Ward 8. has not gone down. And looking at some of the statistics, with the exception of homicide this year, which is at zero, because as I mentioned before, we're at 105 today. We were at 105 on the 21st of July, 2020. The only increase in crime that we have seen, other than the shootings, for example, homicides, has been automobile related crime. What do you need? What do you believe that you need to address the issue of deadly violence in Ward 8?
Well, thank you. That's a great question. It's a broad question.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't go into the data thing, because if you have 5,000 homicides, you have 493,000 killings, you'll be saying it's lower. So I don't,
one is definitely too many, and it doesn't how the concern of the people in the community.
So it's all relative. So some of the things we need to do is address the issue of health, right, in our community. When you eat terrible food, when you only got like one grocery store in the community serving 80,000 people, that's problematic. So right now we're building two new stores in the ward. We're actually building a garden, which is about 4 acres of fresh produce called the Well at Oxen Run, right? When I think about programming in the school, when they say back in the day, I remember we had after-school programs, we built before care programs, we went on trips, we had organizations. That has been stripped from our schools. And so we have to get more programming back into our schools and not just teaching our kids how to take a test, right? Because test is not the end-all solution to how you're going to advance in life. We have more abilities than in passing the test. I didn't do well on tests, but I went to college. I graduated top 10% of the university because people believed in me, pushed me beyond just who was in my household. One of the other things I think about is about is access to employment, right? There are a lot of D.C. is not like in a rural country in Oklahoma or Arkansas. No shade to them, but we are in a major city. We have a booming economy, so we have to build systems where we can get people trained and ready to get into these, not just jobs, but careers. And one of the things we did in Ward 8, we built what is called the D.C. Infrastructure Academy. And so I'm fighting right now to keep it in Ward 8 because it's trying to transfer out of Ward 8 to Ward 5 at Spingarn. So some of those things need to be put in place to address the lack of equity, not equality, but equity in our community. One of the issues also is access to home ownership. Like, we have to put mechanisms in place where we can start building wealth from owning in our community, not just houses, but also our buildings and our businesses. That's important, right? We are the only community in our in nation. You can find us in Chicago, Delaware, Philly, New York, Baltimore. In the black community, we don't own the majority of the buildings and infrastructures in our community. We're renting, and someone else is getting rich and getting wealthy. So just some of the foundational things have to change, because some of this stuff is respecting generational racism through redlining, a lack of access to credit, and lack of access to capital. So you have to say what it is and address it. Through D.C. has $17.5 billion in our budget. We should be empowering everybody who wants to do something positive in the community. We should be helping them, not to give a hand out, but to give a hand up, because someone gave us a hand up. We just didn't get here by osmosis. And so we have to use a lot of our power and influence to do just that. And so we opened up 4 new recreation centers in Ward 8. That's one getting built right now, and they got 3 on the way. And I heard Ms. Bonds talk about that's where she met people that gave her opportunities at these facilities, because we don't find stuff for people to do, they find stuff destructive to do. And we have the infrastructure, the wealth to do it in D.C., and we're not doing it at the level I think we need to do it at. And I'm pressing the envelope. We want to go from 4 recreation centers to 10, to programming, to wealth. Like, I put money into small businesses in Ward 7 and 8, through the Dream Grant, through LSDBE. So I'm not just talking the talk, but I'm walking the walk, and we need everybody on board to push this narrative.
Denise, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was. Oh, I know. Okay, I almost forgot. But I wanted to just go back a little bit. But I think the council member has really kind of put it out there, and he's got the vision and a great job. But, you know, he can build these institutions. We've got to get people in those doors. We've got to get them in there to take advantage of these programs and to make the institutions work. And I wanted to tell the gentleman who called a few minutes ago who talked about, you know, the mother smoking marijuana in the car. You know, we can't judge people And I think we're wasting time and energy when we do that. I mean, many of us grew up with parents that smoked cigarettes, and we were locked up in cars where we inhaled tobacco, which is much worse than marijuana. You know, all of our childhood, from infancy until, you know, whenever. But, you know, some of us decided we would never smoke because we learned at some point that it was bad for our health. And so, you know, we didn't judge those people because everybody at the time was smoking cigarettes, right? And so, I mean, things can be, we can see people doing unhealthy, inappropriate, bad things. Let's not judge them. Let's just kind of figure out, you know, how we can present them with correct information and hope they will accept it or learn something about it, or at least be grateful that we took the time to share it with them. You know, I'm simplifying this thing, but I think in some respects it is very simple, and that is we need to communicate and talk and embrace and be a part of each other's lives if we want something. We got to build a village. We talk about a village. We got to build a village. And the council member is doing his role to make that happen. And we all have to figure out what can we do to build and to improve the quality of the village that we call. Right now, we're talking about Ward 8 because that's where we're focused. But, you know, somebody said this is happening all over the country. So, I mean, let's not spend time judging. I don't think that's important right now. And if what I've said sounds like I'm judging, then I apologize. But I can't judge people. The only thing I can do is to say, let's do the work.
Mm. Maury, calling from Maryland. Maury, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My pleasure. Yeah, listen, I'd like to make some comments, please. I came to D.C. in July 1965, coming out of the military, and my first job was with the Veterans Administration Hospital in North Gap and Irving. But my apartment where I lived was at 14th and Ogden. Now, just a few days immediately after I got here, I began to notice all the kinds of things going on that you're talking about right this minute. I don't see anything different going on now than I did in 1965 when I came here in July. Everything was happening then as it is happening now. So I quickly looked at those things and decided that the problem was parenting. There was no parenting going on. It seemed like that parents were doing many other things, but not parenting. And the fathers in particular, I began to notice that fathers were pretty much absent. And those that were home really were not being parents. They were being too much of a like a friend or something. And so I began to do more exploring, and I came across a program called the Roving Leaders, which was in the Recreation Department. And I began to visit with that program and to sort of hang around and watch them. They were super. They were super. It was part of the Recreation Department. However, in terms of substituting for absent fathers, those guys did a very good job in terms of leadership, in terms of the kind of things that they were teaching about becoming adults and that sort of thing. And probably was the best program that I saw at that time.
Okay. Maury, I hate to cut you off. We still have a lot of phone calls, but I appreciate you getting to that point, because this conversation is not just looking at the old problems, but new solutions, or in your case, a solution that may need to be revisited. You never know. So thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate your phone call. Yeah. Let's go to Steve. Steve calling from D.C. Steve, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. And I appreciate the council member being there and putting this information out and trying to at least come up with some positive ways to address the thing. I want to say this about police. The Kathy lady who decided to put everything on her shoulders and go with the I program, policing, in reference to what is happening with that, qualified immunity gives those guys the right to use any cliche or any form of I was afraid or this to get out of killing an innocent person. And you can do that across the country. You can look at how often they'll use it to get out of a situation. You have, and if there was no video, Floyd's death would have just been a waste of time trying to try this man.
So, Steve, let me stop you because it sounds like you're talking about a completely different show. We're talking
about. Well, I mean, I know we're talking about the little girl.
We're talking about not just Nia Courtney, but we're talking about how to address this deadly violence.
Right now, because you guys don't want fathers, strong fathers, in kids' lives. Most of them are probably strung out or locked up or somewhere else. And you got all these women running around like they got asses for men. And you got little boys out here trying to pretend to be men and doing all these killings. And now you got little girls doing the same thing. So your asses are only having these meetings and not even in the communities where this stuff is happening, talking to the people who go through it. And you can't have people like Kathy, who the lady who just talked about all of this I did with my kids. She probably didn't even grow up in D.C. for the most part.
Actually, she said that she did, but I'm low on time, but I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to try to get some final thoughts on this conversation. Your final thoughts, Denise. I mean, where do we go, you know, from here?
Well, one thing I want to say, and I wish someone had called to support fathers, because one of the statistics that we've heard and we're following up on is that Black fathers are more engaged with their children locally and nationally than white fathers. They may not be educated. We may not know like what they're doing. You know, Nia was out there with her mother and her father. We've had kids that have been killed in cars with their father. Fathers pick up their children from school. Fathers may not be perfect, but fathers are involved, and we keep embracing this narrative that's so negative against Black fathers that is false. So first of all, we need to get that straight. And then secondly, you know, I cannot say it. My father used to say it all the time, Councilmember White adopts the theme. You know, if it is to be, it is up to me, and no one can save us for us but us. We've got to stop pointing fingers at what other people are doing and ask ourselves, what can I do to improve the quality of life for myself, for my family, for my community, for my nation of Black people? What can I do?
Yeah, Councilmember White, I've got 30 seconds for you.
I want to thank you for this very important dialogue.
Sure.
Aspect and voices. I think it's important that we tell our own stories, right? I keep hearing all these narratives from other people telling our stories, and just, you know, credible voices on here today about how we can address and come up with solutions. And I look forward to keeping this dialogue going to make sure that there's a baby that haven't even been born yet, that we're going to provide solutions for him or her somewhere down the line. But one other thing I want to say is we have to have love in our community. Love, man. God is love. We got to put more love and remove hate from out of our community. And that's on all left. Yeah. Thank you.
Ward 8 Councilmember Trayon White, Denise Rolark Barnes of the Washington Informer newspaper. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts with us. And we will continue to examine this issue and hope that things get better with work. That's the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, July 21st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.